You're listening to More Perfect Marketing, the show for business owners and entrepreneurs always on the lookout for smart marketing ideas to keep their business moving forward. And now, here's your host, David Baer.
Well, hello, and welcome to another episode of More Perfect Marketing. It's David Baer here, and today we're going to be talking about the topic of customer lifetime value, and another term, CVO. We'll get into all of that in a moment. But first, I want to share with you, when I saw the name of my guest appear on my calendar today, I got super excited, and not necessarily for the reason that you may be thinking. Many of my listeners are aware that I have a background in the wine industry, but you may not know that before that, I actually worked in the classical music industry. And so when I saw the name Valentin Radu on my calendar, I thought, no way, the famous conductor is going to be joining me? How exciting, but also how odd, because he doesn't know very much about marketing. Well, to my relief and perhaps to yours, it's not that Valentin Radu who I'm speaking with, but rather one who is similarly romantic and poetic in many different ways, as I discovered when I saw his TEDx talk recently, in Romanian, by the way, on YouTube. And so I am thrilled to welcome a TEDx speaker and an amazing entrepreneur, Valentin Radu, who is joining me from, are you in Bucharest today?
Exactly. I'm from Bucharest, and I am in Bucharest today.
Excellent. Well, Valentin, thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks a lot for having me today, David, and thanks everyone for listening or watching this episode.
So I'm curious, do you know your namesake?
My namesake?
So Valentin Radu, the conductor who I mentioned earlier.
Yeah, of course. I'm always seeing him popping up when I'm checking for the SEO. You know, it's hard to beat that guy because he's very famous, and he's a fantastic, and I'm glad that I share the name with him.
Yes, absolutely. Although I have to say, when I looked for your name on YouTube, you're dominating. And that's perhaps because you're a regular guest on podcasts these days, in addition to your TEDx talk. And I asked you before we hit record, what was it that you're looking to get out of all of these podcast appearances? And you said that you want to evangelize about a particular topic. And so I wonder, let's talk about that topic. But I want to, before we get into the meat of it, get back to this TEDx talk, because I think that there's actually a relationship between the two. So what is it you're evangelizing?
Yeah, I'm evangelizing the concept of customer value optimization and having more people learning that is not only about acquiring customers that never come back. Maybe the relationship that you've seen as well with my TEDx talk was that I'm also optimizing my own life, and I'm doing this by observing where I am and what is the path. You know, I'm always a strong believer that there is a way, despite how big is the struggle that I'm facing.
So I said a moment ago that you are poetic, and that wasn't in fact how I was seeing the connection, but I think it's you're right. You're right about that, that there is that connection about optimization. What I was thinking was, you know, you and I chatted before I hit record about the fact that we see, you know, this topic of opportunity that businesses have to deepen relationship and make more sales and support their customers further, right, through a longer term relationship. It's not just about getting the initial sale or the initial traffic to a website, et cetera. Well, I think relationship is very, very key to all of this. And you had this realization about you know, yourself and about life in general. And I think it connects a little bit with how we relate to others, and businesses can certainly learn a thing or two about relationship, thinking about how individuals relate with one another.
For sure, David. And I think the most in my talk, I was I addressed the fact that there are some key relationships that influenced my journey, my path. And I'm an ex-poor kid from Bucharest, Romania. I have a very difficult childhood. I was very poor, whatever. And by all means, I've guided myself through these principles that I got from my parents, which were all around providing more value, giving first and expecting afterwards the reward. So I've let's say overcome a lot of barriers and obstacles through this focus on where is the path and what kind of value can I provide so that I can get to the next level. In my story, you know, in my inner journey, I'm always aware about the fact that without the struggle, there is no progress. Therefore, I must embrace the struggle. And that kind of mindset helped me build a life and get from some very, very dark places that I've been into and that I've addressed in my TEDx talk.
And I'm going to push on this just a little bit further, and then let's talk about the business application of this. But just for context, because I think unfortunately it's out of some people's memories, or some of our listeners may be too young to know the environment you grew up in. But you're in Romania, and Romania was a very different place in your childhood. And so when you talk about darkness and struggles, I imagine that contributes to it as well. It was part of the Soviet Union at a point in history.
Yeah, it was a communist country. We were very poor. I remember that when I was 7-8 years old, my main meal was a loaf of bread that I've put on the oven, to feel like it's a sandwich. So basically it was a very dark place, not only about this, because poverty is one thing, but the fact that we were always, afraid of speaking to one another, even in our apartment. It was such a dark place because of the relationships between the people out there. So mainly that environment, the external environment, was really challenging, to say the least. And now we are in a completely different place, even though here people are always complaining about XYZ, the politicians, the environment. But if you have the contrast, because the contrast creates value, when you can say what's valuable if you have the right contrast to compare it. And now we are in a very different position, of course.
Sure. And I should correct myself. It wasn't part of the Soviet Union. It was Soviet occupied and part of the Soviet bloc. But that's exactly another episode for a different type of podcast. So let's talk a little bit about some of the things that brought you from the history that you're sharing into the world that you now occupy in the online e-commerce world and the work that you're currently doing. But let's start with this area of specialty, this conversion rate optimization, the customer lifetime value concept. And if you can sort of just talk about that, and then I want to know how you got here.
Yeah, so I've addressed this topic thanks to my experience as an e-commerce entrepreneur. So we were struggling to make money, to be honest. We couldn't be profitable, even though we were spending like $1 million on Google Ads. And my friends were mocking me. They were working at this multinational like Oracle, Amazon, Oracle, mm-hmm. Microsoft. They all had operations here in Romania. And they had these big salaries back in 2010, and they were always mocking me. Hey, Mr. Entrepreneur, you never got enough money to go in a vacation. You never have time nor money. Why are you doing it? And this kind of struggle, again, is the same theme. Unless you are struggling, you're not going to make progress. You're not going to make significant progress. And thanks to that, I was saying no more. And I was diving into Google Analytics. I was looking at the big visitor behavior until something popped into my mind. You know what? It's not only about website behavior. It's also about customer behavior. So let's look at the ones which are doing what we want, which is to buy from us and to buy more often. And thanks to that, I've started to run surveys, to ask customers what's going on in their heads. And at some point, I've realized that, hey, our best customers are not the average customers. And our best customers, guess what? They are buying truck insurance. You know, they are truck owners and they insure their trucks, and their lifetime value is 12 times higher than the average customers. And mm-hmm. there are also the luxury car owners. And when I've found this anomaly, I've said, yeah, and we've changed the way we've advertised. We've changed the way we were pricing. We've changed the way we communicate. So that was an inflection point in our history. And we've started to become very, very profitable. So, and that allowed us to scale like crazy. When I sold that company, we had 250,000 paying customers at a customer retention of 82%, which was way higher than we had before.
So just to remind listeners who may have heard this before, this is exactly what we talk about when we reference things like Jay Abraham's three ways to grow a business, right? His ideas were to A, increase the number of customers, to B, increase the size of a transaction, and C, increase the frequency of transactions. And this is the general concept that we're dealing with in this situation as well.
Yeah, I love Jay Abraham's simple yet comprehensive approach, and that's exactly it. So if you want to scale a company, look at those three components. Those are the ways, and behind them, by the way, there are some dominant numbers. For instance, in an B2B or online context, to increase the number of customers, you need to increase the traffic and the conversion rate. To increase the average transaction size, you look at the number of products which are being sold, and to increase the number of orders, let's say, that's purchase frequency, right? So you can also, there is also the timing interval which should be taken into account. But without focusing on these dominant numbers, you are over optimizing usually for more traffic or for more customers, neglecting the fact that you have some components that you're not considering at all.
Yeah, I should hasten to add that while we're talking today about online business, all of this stuff is applicable to pretty much any type of business, whether it's online or off. It's just that it's a lot. We have the technology to help support our ability to track and even act on these things through automation online in a way that we don't necessarily have in traditional offline businesses, right? In an offline business, you might have somebody who needs to manually take an action, which, by the way, could be supported by technology, could be supported by, you know, your HubSpot or Keep
CRM,
your CRM reminding you, hey, today you need to pick up the phone and call somebody.
Exactly. Yeah, that's right.
So, all right, let's shift gears again, because there's a lot I want to cover and we don't have a ton of time. But one of the things you told me was that you're, in addition to the work that you're doing, helping support businesses, you're also working with agencies. So maybe we should understand a little bit about the work that you're doing to help businesses first, because I think it will then inform the work that you're doing with agencies.
Yeah, for sure. So I've become obsessed, and that's the right word for about customer value optimization. Back in 2015, when two things occurred at the same time. One of our biggest customers got out of business, even though they were one of the largest e-commerce player in Central and Eastern Europe. And that was because of their customer lifetime value, which was going down. So basically, they've postponed the analysis, the proper analysis and customer segmentation for too long. I showed up in the picture too late. We've made this analysis, but they couldn't get the company back on track. And at the same time, another company that we were working with, they've spent something like 2 million euro in a TV campaign. I talked with their CMO and he was pissed off due to the management making this decision. And we were doing conversion rate optimization for them. Thanks to that conversation, we've applied this RFM segmentation, which stands for recency, frequency, and monetary segmentation. And we revealed which are their best customers and the fact that their positioning with their ads were hitting to the wrong customers. And by the way, their best loyal customers were not coming from big cities, but they were coming from smaller cities which haven't got the shopping mall. So their budget and their target and everything was a bit skewed. Yeah. So with this aha moments, I realized that this is going to turn into a category of itself. So having a company and analyzing the entire customer lifecycle, identifying the ideal customers, and then tweaking the whole touch point, all the touch points throughout the customer journey is going to become a discipline in itself. So we've built a technology about it, a methodology around it, and now we have hundreds of companies which are using this methodology. We even built an academy called the CVO Academy, which stands for Customer Value Optimization. So that's how we are helping businesses.
There's so much in there that you know, we could teach a lesson on like five different points that you made for a full episode. And I want to circle back to just one of them because there's too many goodies to let me just, you know, continue on. But you noticed that there was a certain segment of their audience, you said, right? Where or a location where they were excelling versus where they might have, you know, their gut might have told them they were excelling, right? And so you use data to reveal something that might not have been obvious. Yeah. And this is, I think, a lesson that any business needs to hear, which is that there's gold in that data if you understand how to look at it and the types of things that you should be paying attention to that most businesses aren't. So how, as you're working with businesses, how do you help them identify these opportunities that might not be so obvious?
Yeah, so what we are doing is we help them identify the ideal customer profile. So we do know the game in marketing. Like many companies brag about, we've created the buyer persona, or we know the buyer persona. That's, you can't create it, you have it, right? So you need to identify, because you are now, you've built some products, you've built a narrative, you've made some messaging, and you are attracting some customers. Some of those customers are your best ones. So identifying them with the segmentation method, it's mandatory to optimize your marketing spend and to stop shooting in the dark. Mm-hmm. So what we are doing with the segmentation that we have for e-commerce, it's we apply this recency, frequency, and monetary value. By applying it, you get to a point where you identify not only who has the highest lifetime value, which is important, but also who has the highest lifetime value and they are continuing to buy right now. And with this type of method, you can calibrate your message according to where they are in the customer journey, because you have long gone valuable customers. We call them the ex-lovers. We also have long gone customers that were one-night standers. Yeah, they have the highest lifetime value, and we call them the Don Juans, right? So yep. They have highest lifetime value, but they purchase only once, and that happened 2 years ago. And also you have good loyal customers. We call them the soulmates, let's say. So with this type of perspective, you can dive into your own data and realize, you know what? These are our best customers. Those are the products that they are buying. And that's their reasoning, by the way. With the jobs to be done methodology, we help them understand, you know what? That's what's causing them to buy over and over again from you.
This is, again, I'm seeing places where this applies, not just in the online world, but we recently had a guest on. His name is Brian Kurtz, who comes from the direct marketing world, and he was in the newsletter and selling books on the back end of newsletter subscriptions business, right? There's a big company that was one of his competitors called Agora, but he ran a company called Boardroom for many years. Everything that you've just described applies to that business model too. Now, they're not doing anything online except, you know, capturing the lead and taking the payment, and everything is happening through direct mail. But these are all very much applicable, even to a local retail store, right? Somebody selling sneakers, and how frequently is somebody going to come in and buy their next pair of sneakers or any other consumable product?
Yeah. And data is revealing this type of consumption patterns. It's just that many companies or many managers are sleeping on a gold mine, you know, and they go out there and they brag the attention of new customers without looking at who are their best customers, so that they can tweak the message and attract the right customers for them.
All right. So this is what you're doing to help businesses understand this. And obviously it's businesses of all shapes and sizes, but it sounds like you're focusing mostly in the online world where they have the technology to be able to most easily manage this. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. We also have omnichannel companies that have identifiable customers. So it's also working in a B2B context and offline, where you know what, this is the company and I can get a hold of that person if I want.
Got it. Okay. Now, there's other professionals like you and me who actually serve businesses who you're also helping. A, you're helping them see the light, and then B, you're helping them actually do something about it. And I wonder if you can talk to that point for a little while.
Yeah, so we discovered at some point that we can't scale anymore because we need doctors, right? We can't serve everyone. We do have a consulting arm of 20 people, which are helping some companies do these type of things. But at some point, we realized that we're hitting a wall because what we are selling is highly advanced. Let's say there is not like a plug and play solution, like a Slack product. You know, you need to understand these kind of things. So we teamed up with agencies after we've built the CVO Academy. And what we are doing right now, we are certifying them that they know this type of things. They know the methodology, which has three components: what you say, what you sell, what you do. You know, it's like what you say means marketing, what you sell means the product assortment, and what you do is customer experience. So what happened from 2 years ago, since we've started this, we've seen that the brief that the companies are writing to the agencies is kind of different. So before it was like, help me send emails, help me analyze data, help me run ads. Now it's help me fix my business model because I'm struggling. So it's different. It's a different brief. You know, companies are not looking for agencies which are highly specialized and neglect the other components within their business model. And that means the agencies are now struggling as well because they can't acquire new customers and they can't keep their existing customers as they used to. So what we are doing with them, we help them by providing them access to this methodology and also by training them. We basically shadow them while they are providing this new type of services, which is very, let's say, comprehensive and holistic. So there are email marketing agencies which are now learning how to analyze the data, how to spot patterns in the consumer behavior. Or there are CRO agencies which are now understanding how to optimize more than just the website. They need to optimize the entire customer journey. So there are all sorts of agencies, but that's how we help them. And my belief is that mid-sized companies need this type of agency because they can't afford to build this type of teams, advanced teams, in their own within their own companies. And that's a great opportunity in an environment which is now changing, right? It's way more expensive to acquire customers.
Yeah, it's particularly interesting because you and I both work in that space of supporting agencies. We work with agencies who are doing mostly small business work where this kind of thing doesn't exist at all. You know, small businesses are still fixated on the how do we get, you know, one new customer in the door today so that we can pay the rent. And so the agencies there tend to focus on very low-level marketing activities. And you're working with, you know, agencies that are supporting larger organizations, but still organizations that are not thinking this way. And so there's huge value not only in educating the end client, the business, but as I see the landscape of the marketing services world, very similar to what you've just described, which is that there's a lot of challenges with agencies being able to serve their clients the way the clients need to be served once they realize that, you know, the agency isn't doing everything that they could be doing on behalf of the client. And this is, you know, a problem that we see with agencies is that they get fired a lot for doing a fine job, but they're just not doing enough of the type of work they should be doing.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, the game is completely changing right now, David, and we have to level up our game if we want to be ahead of the curve. And I think in the future, the ones that are going to survive and also thrive are the ones which are going to over-deliver just a bit, because if they are not over-delivering to their clients, then their clients will look for alternatives. And pretty much it's the job of the agency to be a bit smarter than their clients on what they are delivering. And that means they need to understand their business model better than they do. Otherwise, why they are being hired for?
So if you were to look at a typical agency these days, and you gave a couple of examples, you said an email marketing agency, a conversion rate optimization agency. So they're working on a sliver of the marketing activity for a business. Yeah. What would you say their perspective is on their role before they meet you and understand what you have to add to their offerings? And then what is the transformation that they go through once they understand from their perspective what yeah. you can bring to them?
Yeah, of course. So as an email marketing agency, for instance, they think that they are in the job of sending newsletters, crafting better email campaigns, and improving KPIs like open rates or click-through rates or revenue per recipient. Now, what they are really in the game of, they are in the game of nurturing existing customers to improve customer lifetime value. And they are also in the game of converting customers from subscribers to customers, right? So they have a list of prospects that they need to turn into first-time customers. In order to do so, they need to understand the CLV to CAC game, right? So they need to understand what are the unit economics of their clients so that they are more efficient in what they do. Because when you send emails, you have a bunch of recipients, right? So you are in the game of sending those emails. But if you don't know the buying frequency, right? So if you don't know the cadence of how customers will buy again, and all that you are doing, you send your newsletters, your campaigns with your cadence, because that's how you've been taught, then you will send the wrong message at the right time, or you will send the right message at the wrong time. So you don't want to do this. So analyzing the consumption behavior will allow you to become a better email marketer. So understanding how customers buy, why they are buying, who are the best customers, and what kind of relationship has the company that you are serving with their customers will allow you to be relevant. And relevancy leads to efficiency. Right, so you can't be efficient unless you are relevant. So basically, that's how the email marketing agencies are transitioning to understanding the customer segments, crafting sequences based on where is the customer. Is in the acquisition phase? Is in the onboarding phase? We need to prevent churn, or we need to reactivate because they are gone. So with this type of customer journey, they are way more effective. And that's how the email marketing agencies are transforming themselves thanks to this cooperation with them.
All right. We're recording this at the first quarter of 2023. And unless you know, our listeners or you have your head buried in the sand, there's some really exciting and somewhat scary technological advances happening right now. And you've been talking a lot about use of data, analysis of data, acting upon the information that we learn from data. And so I'm curious, the thing I've been you know, sort of alluding to is the artificial intelligence generative artificial intelligence advances that we've been seeing. Knowing your space really well, where do you think that you can project opportunity with these technological advances in the type of work that you're doing?
Yeah. So the market is going to go into a place where the replenishment, let's say, the propensity to buy again is going to be calculated automatically. So basically sending the message, when to send what kind of message, is going to be handled by an AI for sure. I mean, we are in this race. There are other companies for sure. Another thing is that what kind of message you are sending is going to be also be handled by the AI, because you have this type of variables like, hey, you've bought this product, and chances are that you're running out of, I don't know, coffee or whatever. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So these type of patterns, consumption patterns, and the messages are going to be handled by the AI. However, this game is not going to be happening this year. I think we are 3-4 years away from a moment where the big retailers, which are, let's say, stable enough, will leverage this type of technologies, mm-hmm. which will make them very relevant in terms of how they are talking with their customers. Now, the caveat is, how can they aggregate this data? What kind of systems allows them not to sound like Frankenstein? You know, on one channel you say something, on another channel you say another thing. So the tone of voice of the brand is going to be a problem, but it's not such a huge problem to tackle. At this moment, what we do know for sure is that the ability of companies to leverage their data is, I don't know, maybe 5% of what it can be, you know, if you figure out how much data, how much first party data and zero party data is not being leveraged by the companies.
This is a rabbit hole that, again, we could go down, but I think I won't, because there's still so much to come. And as you said, you know, we're a few years away from seeing the implementation of the type of thing that you've described. But I think those larger organizations which embrace it are also going to be the organizations which subsidize the ability for smaller organizations to do it a lot cheaper. Right. Just the way that, you know, data access used to be in the analog world before every you know, everything was available through, you know, Meta or Facebook before that to be able to get your message in front of a very targeted audience. You had to spend a lot of money to access that data. And so it was out of reach for a lot of small businesses. I imagine that we're going to be going through a similar type of process here. So it's what we'll see this with smaller organizations sometime in the future, once the larger organizations actually take the leap.
Yeah, the entry barriers will be lower. What's going to be harder is to leverage this type of data, because again, we are now living into a world which is kind of let's say challenging. If we think about it, I mean, the gap is going to be so high between the ones which are already there, so they have access to this type of technology, and they also have enough data to understand the patterns, right? Because it's not only about having access to way to process the data, it's also having the volume of data so that you identify where the market is going. So the winner takes it all, it's is not so hard to believe right now. So, but it's that invisible hand of the market, which hopefully will sort it out for the human beings in the future.
The invisible hand of the market. Well, who is Adam
Smith.
Smith, there we go. I knew I'd heard a phrase like that before. So I think this is a great place to leave it. As you were talking about that, I was thinking about a phrase I often hear my business partner utter, which is that the best marketers speak the language of finance. And I think to a certain extent, you know, all of this data talk, whether you're a business owner or you're a marketer, can sound pretty boring or pretty overwhelming. But as I hope you've discovered, it's essential for understanding the opportunity to grow revenue in a business. And by ignoring this stuff, you're I think, Valentin, you said earlier, you know, it wasn't leaving money on the table, but not accessing all the gold that's sitting there right inside your business.
Yeah, that's right. I think this is such a neglected part, David. You know, the CLV to CAC ratio is how you grow a company. That's the sure path to profitability. You know, how much you are spending to acquire a customer acquisition cost, and how much you are getting from a customer down the line, and then slicing the data to understand which are our most valuable customers, which are our best channels to acquire our best customers. These type of things are going to be mandatory in the future, because right now companies were riding this wave of growth, but that's gone, that's passed already.
So you are, as I said at the beginning, on a mission here, and to help you on that mission, you have a book that you're launching. You want to tell us a little bit about it and where people can find it?
Yeah, it's my life's work. So after 17 years in this rodeo, in this ultra marathon, I've managed to have some good help from Scribe Media, which is a company specialized in helping entrepreneurs write. So I'm finally done after 1 year. It was the hardest project that I've ever made. So the book is going to be launched in at end of May. It's called The CLV Revolution. And if you want to read the first chapter or get notified when it's published, you go to theclvrevolution.com, and that's it. So that's where you can find more about it. It's basically the whole journey. I've made it like a manual for people that want to tackle this new opportunity in the space.
Well, I would probably argue it's not a new opportunity, but it's an opportunity that is likely new to most of our listeners that they've yet to take advantage of. So that's theclvrevolution.com. We'll make sure to have that as well as Valentin's other links in the show notes. And Valentin Radu, thank you so very much for joining me. This has been such a treat.
Thanks a lot for having me, David, and all the best from Bucharest.
Thank you. Folks, you have been listening to More Perfect Marketing. There was a lot in this episode, so I might suggest you go back and listen to it again, because there's some gems in there that you probably didn't pick up on the first time. And of course, if you know someone else who can benefit from listening, please share it with them. In the meantime, I'm David Baer. We'll see you on another More Perfect Marketing soon. Bye-bye.
You have been listening to More Perfect Marketing. Now you can put what you've learned here into practice when you join the free listener community at mpmcommunity.com. That's mpmcommunity.com. When you join today, you'll receive David's collection of 26 smart marketing cheat sheets to help you master your marketing, plus additional business building training. So don't delay. Join us today at mpmcommunity.com. We can't wait to welcome you.
Thank you.